Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Because they had a backup and a quarterback, but you know, I will say Brady is, more than any of his peers or more than any of the his quarterback brethren, obviously gets picked apart a little bit more than anyone else does, and that sort of comes with the territory of being labeled, you know, the GOAT, is that whenever there's one little slip-up, it's not necessarily considered one slip-up with him. It's always sort of turned into, is this the beginning of the end? Is it all done for him? You know, he's losing this, and people critiquing this or that, his arm strength, his vision, seeing ghosts, all this stuff. So I think for him, there was maybe an element of that, and you know, there has been, there's been throughout the year, you know, reasonable criticisms of a team that wasn't all that great. But for them, I mean, I think it's all about what you believe, and I think they are believing some of it, not necessarily all of it, but enough to make it, you know, sort of their rallying cry.
Hey, Michael, the Tom Brady story, obviously, you know, a big part of it is being drafted where he was drafted and the situation through which he became the Patriots starter. And now he's had unprecedented levels of success. He's a Bay Area guy, so there's certainly a large population of football fans that live out here that begrudgingly have an affinity for Tom. Even the most diehard Niners, Joe Montana fans have slowly started to concede, yeah, maybe Tom's the best ever. But has Tom changed at all in terms of a personality? As Rick alluded to, he gets a ton of attention, not, I would say, more negative than positive if you're looking at it outside the greater Boston area. But has he become more guarded, or is he still kind of that humble, you know, middle round draft pick that made it big?
I think there's maybe two different Bradys, and there's the marketing Brady, the guy who's, you know, pushing the book and the cookbook and the lifestyle and the exercise bands and all that. And I think that maybe turns some people off and kind of think he's sort of, I don't know, in sort of his own little branded world. Mm-hmm. But I think generally the football player is still the same guy. I mean, I saw him today. I was running to the bathroom in the middle of that rally, and I saw him talking to all the other captains of the team, most of whom are, you know, 25 years old. And he's still interacting with those guys like a teammate. You see him in the locker room still as sort of, he's still him. He's obviously on a whole different plane of being famous and all of that and accomplishments and age-wise and everything. But generally, you know, speaking, it's not all that different than it was maybe 10 years ago. I do think he is a little bit more guarded with the public comments, because I always go back to, I think it was 2010, there was a season opener. He said, you know, it's a 4:30 start, so fans have extra time to get lubed up. And within 15 minutes, there was, like, you know, statements against Tom Brady, you know, encouraging drinking and all that. So he had to come out with a statement saying he meant water. And I think after that, he sort of realized that every time he spoke, it was going to be a headline. So he's just generally gone into more, you know, boring, plain Patriots speak. But I think that's more of a factor of just not wanting to constantly make headlines for saying the smallest little things.
Rick Tittle and Michael Urban with Michael Hurley. He covers the Patriots for WBZ, CBS affiliate in Boston. A couple more questions for Michael. You know, we keep hearing about all this fraction going on between, you know, TB12 and Belichick and Alex Guerrero and former players saying, oh, the Patriot way, it's like the Marines, and Gronk's going to retire, he can't take it anymore. And then we look up, and then they're in the Super Bowl, and everybody's smiling. I mean, how much is that an issue? Because the press certainly seems to roll with that.
Yeah, when that big story was coming out a little more than a year ago, I think it was, you know, right around the early January last year, it was sort of, the whispers were starting to come out that story was going to come out about all these, you know, the fractions and the issues and the tension behind the scenes and how, you know, it threatened to end this run with Kraft, Belichick, and Brady. And even before it came out, I remember saying, there's going to be stuff in here that's definitely true, that's definitely accurate, but I still think maybe 29 or 30 teams in the league would gladly trade their problems for the Patriots' problems just because of what they do and what they're constantly able to accomplish. And since then, you know, they've been to two straight Super Bowls. They've managed, you know, granted it wasn't a great season, but they've managed, you know, a first-round bye. And meanwhile, you look around the league, what were there, 8 coaches fired this year? And the teams like the Packers greatly underperformed, you know, teams that are supposed to be there every year didn't do it, and they're still there. So I think there's no explanation for it. I mean, Bill Belichick is a human being. Tom Brady is a human being. The rest of the team is football players just like any other team, yet they still manage to do this every year. We've been watching it closely for 18 years now, and there's still no simple definition of why no one else can copy it. It's just a ridiculous thing they have going, and I mean, it's going to end someday, I think, probably, but it's clear that right now it's as strong as ever.
Hey, Michael, let's talk a little bit about Gronk. He had his issues this year, for sure. Was not nearly as effective as we're used to seeing him dominate in years past. But where is he at now? I mean, he made a big catch late in the game to help the Patriots get to the Super Bowl, but kind of a shell of himself otherwise.
Yeah, I think with him, he's just lacked the explosiveness. And I think that's a big thing. The biggest threat with him was he was a massive mammoth human being, mm-hmm. but he could run as fast as a receiver with those running up the seams. You couldn't put a linebacker on him, that's for sure. Now he's been a little bit easier to cover, but I also think he, along with sort of the whole team, have sort of played the 2018 season like an NBA team, just sort of like getting through it. You know, you probably see with the Warriors up close this year, it's just sort of like they know what they are, and they know once the playoffs begin, they can sort of kick it up a notch. And I feel like with Gronkowski, given all his health issues, given that he had some nagging injuries this year, especially with his ankle, I have a feeling he sort of took it, you know, maybe 85-90%, wasn't the explosive pass catcher, still was an absolute bowling ball as a run blocker. I think that's really come into focus with his catches going down, as people have paid attention to his blocking, which is just out of control what he does to some defensive linemen. So I think he's still physically capable, and I think what you saw in Kansas City was him sort of emptying the tank, because that is one guy that of the most important Patriots, that is one guy I would not be at all surprised to see him walk away after this year, just because just the physical toll his body's endured. He's had, I don't know, 3 back surgeries, multiple arm surgeries. It's just, you know, the tore his knee. It's just he's taken so many hits and such a pounding. If this were his final run, what he did in Kansas City could be a good, you know, prelude to whatever he does in the Super Bowl and just be the end of a Hall of Fame career, because I would not be surprised at all if he's just going to leave it all out there and walk away.
You know, Michael, Troy Aikman had his Emmitt Smith and other quarterbacks have had their guys. And Brady, you look at the Dillons and the Green Ellises and the Woodheads, and it's almost the same thing again this year. Michelle, White, Burkhead, yet whoever it is, sometimes not household names, they just get it done. And you can say, well, you know, who's the Sean McVay there? They go through coordinators like they go through their underpants there under Belichick. So how is it that it just seems like no matter who they have a tremendous running game?
Well, the running backs have been good in their own right this year. I'm not trying to say that Sony Michel wasn't, you know, very good as a rookie, or that Rex Burkhead. And James White is an unbelievable pass catcher out of there. Not necessarily as a straight runner, but the biggest thing, and it's probably the biggest reason the Patriots are here, and it doesn't, you know, sell magazines or get TV ratings, but it's the offensive line. They have been outstanding, and everyone says Dante Scarnecchia, the offensive line coach, is almost worthy of the Hall of Fame for the job that he does. And I'm honestly, I couldn't name 5 offensive line coaches throughout history, so I'm not necessarily qualified to make that case. But you watch the work they do against, look at this, just this postseason, where you have Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram absolutely silenced, and you have Dee Ford and you have Justin Houston absolutely silenced. It's that and the cohesion. Josh McDaniels has had a perfect game plan the past 2 weeks, and it's just, you see them come out with an eight-minute, 80-yard drive to score a touchdown in the opening drive. You see them do it the week before. That is, I think, the essence of what they've been doing and how everything's been going so well. If Belichick knows what's coming, McDaniels knows how to implement it, Brady knows what to call at the line if he needs to, and the offensive line has just been almost perfect this postseason. So, and it's crazy, too. I was watching Super Bowl 49 the other night, and it was the one against the Seahawks, and the entire offensive line is different. And that was a game just, you know, 5 seasons prior, I should say, and that entire offensive line has been completely swapped out, and yet here they are still dominating. It's like they never take that step back that you're supposed to, but it just speaks. And then you mentioned, you didn't mention, but Trent Brown coming in, just stepping in at left tackle and basically having a seamless transition after you lose Nate Solder in free agency, who was supposed to be a huge loss. You have a guy that never played left tackle regularly as a starter, and now he's protecting Tom Brady's blind side and doing it very well. So it's really the biggest story. And again, I know it's not exactly spicy to talk about the O-line, but it's absolutely huge.
Hey, among the things that the Rams do very well, what do you think the Patriots are going to really try to focus on to handle, and what might they be best equipped to handle that the Rams do well, that they can maybe take that out of their approach?
Well, I don't think it's any secret that it's the interior of that line with Aaron Donald. And if you ever look at Brady's worst games and the worst Patriots games in the biggest moments, it's when the opponent can get pressure up the middle. And I don't think, you know, a quarterback who can scramble, like, say, Russell Wilson is someone who could deal with that. But someone like a pocket passer like Brady, he's made his entire career on stepping up into the pocket, you know, sort of making his way with shuffles and moving up and moving sideways, but not necessarily escaping. So if you can get pressure at Tom Brady, that's how you beat him. And Aaron Donald is as good as they come. So, I mean, on the other hand, the Patriots are very good at neutralizing your extreme talent on the defensive line. They've always held J.J. Watt in check, and all the times they've met him, like I mentioned the guys earlier this year, last year Fletcher Cox in the Super Bowl wasn't super, super impactful. You know, they've done well in some cases, but in some of the worst games, namely the Giants Super Bowls come to mind. But if you can pressure Brady up the middle, it's going to be a lot of trouble. So that's where, you know, it's strength versus strength. And it's something we can't sit here and predict and say, oh, this team's going to do this. It's really going to come down to execution and who, I don't know, it's a battle of wills in there. I don't know what those giant men do to each other, but I think that's going to probably decide the game, because I think without that, the Patriots, the way their offense is functioning right now, are just going to roll down the field all night long.
Michael, I know there's a prop bet for Jim Nance or Tony Romo if they're going to say Hotlanta or not. How hard is it for you in your coverage to not say Hotlanta?
Pretty hard. I was looking at the forecast, and it's going to be pretty cold. It's going to be 40 degrees all week, so I think maybe that will help. But so far, so good, but I haven't actually gotten on the plane yet. So once I get down there, I'm not sure. The urge is going to be strong, but I'll keep the phone in my pocket, and I will not do it, I promise.
That's Michael Hurley. He covers the Patriots back in Beantown for WBZ, the CBS affiliate. If you'd like to follow him on Twitter, go ahead and get him at Michael F. Hurley. Michael, thanks for your time, man. Great stuff. Enjoy the Super Bowl, and hopefully we'll catch up with you down the road.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right. Super Bowl talk, and we will be getting to Sean Estes here in about 15 minutes. Rick Tittle, Michael Urban with you, 95.7 The Game. News breaking a few hours ago that Peter McGowan, the owner of the Giants, or I should say the leader of the ownership group that kept the Giants in San Francisco when they were as good as gone to Tampa St. Pete back in 1992. That's right, because Dusty came in 93. They got Barry Bonds. He wasn't even officially the owner then. Passed away because of cancer. And you think about he was not a deep pockets guy. He's richer than you and I will ever be, but he had to really scramble and get a lot of other people together. And that I can't even imagine how hard that was to be say, no, we can save the team if you throw your money in.
Mm-hmm.
And to get a rich guy to go, okay, but he was able to do that.
Yeah. What he pulled off was against all odds. I mean, everybody had them gone. I mean, even when Shin was brought up as a possible owner, I don't think anybody really bought that as going on. I think because of Shin's reputation, I think a lot of people felt like that was maybe just an attention grab, another chance for him to bask in the spotlight.
Walked around the stadium,
yeah,
everybody
just bask in the spotlight for a little bit more. But I thought they were gone. I mean, and you see that that picture that we've all probably seen now of Brandon Crawford when he was a little kid, just so bummed the Giants were going to be leaving.
That kid would become the best shortstop in San Francisco Giants history.
Think about that; it's incredible.
It's amazing.
And Peter McGowan, again, there's a lot of dots you can connect. Peter McGowan is a big part of the reason why Brandon Crawford is going to go down as one of the great shortstops of all time. I'm not going to say greatest just yet.
Greatest of San Francisco history. All the gold gloves, all-star games, and the rings? Who even comes close? I know you love Chris Spire.
I got a soft spot for Rich Arilli.
Listen, I love number 35. I do. But Rich Arilli would tell you that it's can I tell you a funny story about Rich Aurelia's first major league home run at the stick?
I'll decide if it's funny, but yes.
Well, maybe it's not that funny. He hit his first home run, and that was the first year that they had the Spry Seniors, which Kruko called ball dudes. And now they're just called Bald Dudes.
Right.
But the program was called Spry Seniors.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, see, I worked Giants games for 10 years in TV, Giants and A's.
You know all the stuff. I didn't know Crazy Crabs was bad on purpose.
Yeah, Pat Gallagher. Let's get someone they can boo on purpose.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. It's fascinatingly clever. But apparently the home run was hit, and the guy who got the ball in left field, he went over to the Bald Dude on the left field line, and he said, "Hey, this is Richie's first home run. I know he probably wants the ball. Can you give it to him? I don't want anything in exchange. Just make sure he gets it." And so the Bald Dude said, okay. He put it in his Giants starter jacket and he went home. So the next day he
forgot about it.
Yeah.
He had a senior moment.
Not too spry. He came back to the stadium the next day and he went up to Aurelio and he said, "By the way, this was your home run from yesterday." And Aurelio goes nuts. "Oh, my gosh, you're kidding me. I thought it was gone forever. I thank you so much." He goes, "Sorry, I kept it for a day." He's like, no, it's amazing. And he was just over the moon.
That's awesome.
Because he thought it was cool.
Nice. I'm going to bring that up to Richie next time I see him.
Actually, sneak in a little A's thing. I was at Media Day Friday at the front office, and I was talking to Pinder, and I go, that grand slam at Toronto, I was doing pre and post at the Greek Festival, and we all went crazy 3,000 miles away. Your best moment of the year? And he goes, "Yeah, and I actually got the ball back."
Really?
Yeah.
On the road. That's nice.
Well, sometimes it's bad because they throw it.
Yeah, true.
They throw. Have you ever thrown a ball on the field?
No, I have never been in that position. I have never.
Let me tell you about me again. Me.
Okay, let's hear it.
Welcome to 95.7 The Tittle. This was a few years ago, and I'm in right field with the 149 bleacher creatures out there. And it's packed. It's when the A's were a playoff team. It's packed. Kyle Seager of the Mariners hits a home run. Now, I'm not working that day. Townie was.
Right.
But I had my press credential on. So the ball lands, and I reach down and pick it up. And I immediately turn to this little kid behind me, and I go, "Here you go." And he looks at me like I'm Jack the Ripper. He's like, no. And I go,
"What?"
I go, "Take the ball."
And then I'm afraid of the ball?
And then I realize the whole bleachers is yelling, "Throw it back." I turn and I see like 1,000 angry faces. "Tittle, throw it back." So I turn.
All 1,000 people knew your last name?
Okay, one guy. "Throw it back." So as I turn to throw it, I'm committed now. I'm halfway to throwing it. And then I realize in my mind, I have a credential on. I'm holding a beer with my left hand. And you're supposed to get kicked out if you... So here's a guy who got in free, who's drinking beer with his free credential, and who's now breaking the law of the stadium. So I threw it way the hell in, and everybody cheered, you know, said, "Yay, good job, Rick." And then I thought, okay, here it comes. Nothing happened. And then later on the MLB app, I looked at the Mariners feed and the A's feed. You could see me pick up the ball, and they never show it again. Not even on the replay. They just show him running around the bases. They show the pitcher going, "Aw, shucks."
And they don't show the ball? Like, if you had a hose, then...
It went to the infield.
It did?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Did you hurt your arm?
No.
No warm-ups whatsoever, and you throw from the bleachers all the way into the infield?
That's why they call me the later hosen, baby.
Nice.
I don't know. But when I think about... the picture you talked about, I mean, that's an incredible picture. For people who don't know, Brandon Crawford, who's from the East Bay, he's from Pleasanton, the former Foothill quarterback, by the way, before he went to UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
He's, even though he was an East Bay kid, he was a diehard Giants fan, and there's a picture of him, what, 5 years old, 4 years?
Yeah.
Maybe younger.
Mm-hmm. I'd say 3 or 4.
Yeah. And he's got the exact same face, and there's a sign that said, "Please don't go," and I think it was in the Chronicle.
So. Yeah.
Examiner.
It's been in every Bay Area newspaper at one point or another.
It's just amazing that he would be the most decorated. Maybe he's not your favorite, but by far the most decorated shortstop in the history of the
yes.
San Francisco
yes.
Giants. Yeah. And he's still going.
Hey, he's got plenty more ball to play.
I did see one thing on his I don't know if it's still there, but I remember a few years ago, because he's so chill, but his his Twitter bio said something to the effect of, "I can't hear the haters over all the cheering." I'm like, really? That's what you want to put?
I'm guessing his wife put that together for him. It'd be better if I can't hear the haters because I have rings stuck in my ears.
You could do Mike Ditka. Yeah, I can't hear you. My Super Bowl ring's making too much noise. You go that way
That's
as well.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, but I just, you know, you think about the long road when you, I mean, and the A's are doing this right now with Cavill. The long road, environmental impact reports, and you're trying to build a sports stadium in the People's Republic of the Bay Area. It's just not, even when it's your own money, you got to jump through hoops that are on fire. And then if you make it, then everyone's like, oh, thanks for building it.
Do you think other owners, in, when the Giants did what they did with Pac Bell Park, not leaning on the city whatsoever, they got it done privately. Do you think there were other baseball owners going, damn, now that cities know that it can be done privately, we can't ask them to pay for it?
Yeah, I remember the Jake. That was free in Cleveland.
Uh-huh.
But what it told everyone, it told Joe Lacob, if you want something built, you know you're going to have to pay for it yourself. Right. And he fully accepted that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with the A's. They're going to pay for it themselves.
Right.
It's not worth it. And that's why I thought Dean Spanos was such a fake schlep rock when he put that Mission Bay thing on the ballot in San Diego. And he's like, okay, last chance, or I move to L.A. He knew that would go down in flames. He's in California.
Right, right.
We're not going to give you public money for a stadium here. They're just not going to do it. So it would be fault. And this is what the Warriors and the A's both know. So they're moving on. I actually emceed an event at Ricky's in San Leandro Friday for the Save Oakland Sports. And Dave Cavill was there. He took questions from everyone and answers, and it was a nice little thing. And
have we seen the last city municipality-funded stadium?
No, I don't think so. Not in Texas when they're building high schools, you know, Division II football stadiums.
Oh, my gosh.
Have you seen some of those?
There's some kids who play high school football in Texas, and then they go to college, and they're playing in front of smaller crowds.
I know. I remember, I think it was Moeller High in Cincinnati where Ken Griffey Jr. went. Like, their football stadium was like a little bowl. It was pretty amazing. Yeah. All right. When we come back, we'll talk to somebody who was an all-star for the Giants when he was pitching under Peter McGowan's ownership group, and that is Sean Estes. I'm Rick Tittle. He's Michael Urban. Come on back. 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Urban and Tittle on 95.7 The Game.
Thank you for that. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you alongside Michael Urban. We'll take him until 7 o'clock. A little good for ball, bad for ball coming up. And we're trying to get former Giants All-Star pitcher Sean Estes on the phone. When we do, we'll throw him on to talk about the passing of Peter McGowan at the age of 76 years old. And, you know, a lot of times, Herbs, listen, let's face it, rich guys, they're easy targets because we feel like they live in a different world. And in some ways, rich guys, rich women, they do. Mm-hmm. They live in a different world. Not that they're not human. They are human. They have their problems as well. But a lot of rich people think, I'll just throw money at a problem and it'll go away.
Right.
Sometimes. So that's why when you get these guys, and we almost call them benefactors, that save teams. McGowan didn't save the Giants because they were a cash cow revenue producing. I mean, like when Lacob bought the Warriors were selling out and they're going to make money no matter what and the value was going to go up. But he bought them because he's a basketball fan. Mm-hmm. But when you buy the San Francisco Giants at that time, you were probably in a situation where you're not going to get rich off it. He bought them because he loved the team, which is a really cool thing.
Yeah, I'm a Bay Area guy, and he's now a Bay Area legend. He's gonna. You can't tell the history of sports in the Bay Area without talking about him.
Let's talk about McGowan now with a guy who was an all-star when he was an owner. It's Sean Estes. Of course, you know him very well as a Giants broadcaster now. And Sean, first of all, sorry about Peter McGowan. When I say the name, what are maybe a couple things that just pop into your head right away?
Well, oh, man, I mean, when you say his name, well, a lot of things pop into my head. he was obviously the president and the managing partner of the club when I became a Giant. So he was the first one that the first owner that I met, and then him and his wife Debbie lived in the city. I always lived in the city as well. In the off season, one of the only players, Bill Miller and I, were the only two players that lived in San Francisco in the winter when the team was in Candlestick. And so he'd invite me out to dinner once in a while with his wife Debbie, and I got to become pretty good friends with Peter and Debbie. And then he was the figure. You know, he was the guy that I saw on a day-to-day basis as a Giant. He was always really good to me, really good to my family. Then I got to know a little bit of the history, just by being a Giant, of you know, how important he was, keeping the club in San Francisco, being so instrumental in that. Just the fact that, you know, he loved the Giants. And then, you know, moving forward, you know, when he stepped down as managing partner in 2008, then creating the Wall of Fame, which is even more significant to me because the criteria that he set allowed me to get on the Wall of Fame. So I see him. I saw him last year, and I had a nice conversation with him, and he's always been very gracious to me, and just always, you know, he's always asked, you know, personal questions, you know, things, because we did have a history together. So every time I see him, when we talk about old stories and we talk about kids and stuff like that. So it was more than just him being an owner of the Giants, and it was more of a friendship that I had with him. And then obviously, you know, owe a lot to him based on the fact that now I got my face on the side of a wall forever. You know, as long as that ballpark's around. And what a great job they did with that ballpark to be, because that thing's going to stand the test of time. It's going to be around forever. So he was huge. He was a big part of that. And so it's a sad day. I was looking forward to him being honored. I think it was February 9th, which in a couple of weeks that he was going to be honored. And I was looking forward to hearing him speak at that, to be on only guy on the wall that wasn't a player, mm-hmm. former player. So, it's sad. I mean, the timing is obviously terrible because, you know, that would have been a pretty cool thing to see him, on Third and King on February 9th. But unfortunately he left too soon. And my condolences obviously go out to his family and especially Debbie.
Hey, Sean, some people get involved in ownership of sports teams, you know, just for the status of it, just to say they're an owner. And some of them will do it because they want to be a super fan and they want to hang out in the clubhouse and, you know, tell people that they rubbed elbows with the superstars that they get cheered for. Where did Peter fall into that? Because I know he was a big baseball fan, but I never got the sense that he was in it to be a super fan.
No. I mean, I guess... if you want to go on one end of the spectrum, and not to say that he's a bad owner, but he's probably more of a super fan, but like guys love playing there, is Mark Cuban with Dallas. And then you, on the other side of things, you have like a Charles Johnson, you know, who I'd never seen or met as a Giant. Just, he just wanted to be an investor in the team. And he obviously had a big part in keeping the team in San Francisco, but never saw him. So he just wanted to be one of those guys that was not around, not seen. It was more probably of an investment for him. But Peter had way more invested in that team, more than just money. He had his heart invested with the San Francisco Giants because, you know, he grew up in New York and he grew up a New York Giants fan. So he saw the transition from New York, from the Giants moving from New York to San Francisco. So then he ends up living in San Francisco and that's his team, you know. So he definitely loved the Giants. He really did. He loved the players. He loved what the organization stood for. And I think a lot of what, you know, he carried on a great tradition. I mean, he really did. And you know, we talk about. I still talk about to people about you know, why do you still work for the Giants, or, you know, where's the connection there? Obviously, I played there, but it really does. It always felt like a family to me, and they really did a great job of making you feel welcome, important. They made you feel that your family was taken care of. They made you feel like that you were part of the city, part of the culture, part of everything, even if you were there for a year. And Peter had a lot to do with that. You know, he lived in the city. So, you know, he'd invite players to go out to dinner, and he'd take them out to dinner and show them the city, show them the good spots to go eat. But the more important, he just wanted you to feel at home, because he knew how much he loved San Francisco, and he knew how much he loved this organization, the Giants. So, I would say he probably fit kind of right in the middle, you know, between super fan and silent investor. I think is kind of the sweet spot, to be honest with you, for an owner.
A couple more questions for former Giants All-Star pitcher Sean Estes. I remember, I mean, you're a guy that went from Candlestick to Pac Bell Park. You saw the transition, and if memory serves, I remember they did a thing where you were on the roof of the old building at 3rd and King, and didn't you throw some underhand to Barry and he hit it in the water? It's like, this is what it's going to look like when he hits him in the water. Didn't you do that?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the running joke, you know, is that I like to ask people, you know, who hit the first home run at Pac Bell Park at the time, and it was someone from the Dodgers, maybe, I can't remember.
Kevin Elster,
yeah. I think he hit three that day.
Right.
And I said, no, it was actually Barry Bonds that hit it, and he hit it off of me in the off season that year, because, you know, they were doing a promotional thing, and they had TV out there, and yeah, I sort of went up to Barry and hit one into McCovey Cove. But yeah, that was the thing, is that I right away just like felt a connection with San Francisco, the city of San Francisco. I mean, back in the day when we played in Candlestick, players didn't live in the city. They went home. They didn't live in the city. You know, most of the guys, even during the season, would live on the peninsula. You know, they had families. They lived down in Foster City or Burlingame, whatever, just based on for the commute. But I moved into the city like the first year I got called up, and I think that Peter appreciated that. You know, I think he did, because he did see that there wasn't a lot of players that stuck around for one reason or another. But as soon as that new ballpark came in and the players started to really see what the city was all about and they started to appreciate San Francisco, you saw more guys sticking around in San Francisco, or at least living in the city. I mean, I know a lot of guys live in the East Bay now, but there's still a bunch of guys that live in the city. And every one of them will tell you that they really enjoy their time during the season. That's even if they leave somewhere else in the winter. But I did it back in the day when we were playing in Candlestick, because I just really, really liked it. So I think Peter appreciated that, and he would always reach out whenever there was something Giants-related and ask me if I'd like to be involved and or have the PR department reach out to me. So I was always willing to do it, because I was there. So, yeah, I got to be probably a little bit closer than most of the players that played in that era with Peter. I know that Barry and Peter were pretty close as well. So, I know it's just sad. It really is. Because, you know, I know that he had had some health issues in the past, and, you know, he fought through those. And so, and I didn't know where he stood right now, you know, physically. And obviously he hadn't been doing too well. But I was just really looking forward to a couple of weeks when I was going to be able to hear him speak. But unfortunately, we won't be able to do that, and we'll have to honor him in different ways. And he'll still get the plaque, you know, outside of the ballpark. But it would have been nice for him to be able to see that and what that means to the city, to the ballpark, to the players that are actually up there. Because it means a heck of a lot to me. It gave me closure in my career for sure.
Sean, you've been around the team long enough, even though you moved on and played at other places after the Giants. Now you're back, brought into the fold as part of the Giants family. And that's one of the things that I think separates or used to separate the Giants from all the other teams in big league ball. Maybe not all of them, but they do a great job of making sure that people such as yourself feel like they are Giants forever. You hear that phrase "forever Giant," and it's, you know, some people might roll their eyes at it, but it's a real thing. And you are, Sean, a forever Giant. And I feel like Peters, maybe he was the start of that. He insisted on that.
No, you're right, without a doubt. Like I said, he was the guy that was running the ship, you know, when I became a Giant back in 1995. And so that was the culture. And I don't know if it had something to do with before him. I just know that when I got to San Francisco, like I said, I felt an instant connection with it, and I felt that I was family, and I didn't know how long I was going to be a Giant, but I played 6 years with San Francisco, but I laid roots down there. They do a great job of honoring past teams and players for their accomplishments. They love the reunions. They love to bring players back and make them feel, you know, part of what they have, because it is good. I mean, like you said, I've been on a lot of different teams since San Francisco, and there's not one of those teams that I can, and granted, I only spent a year on a lot of those teams, but I was on a couple good teams outside of the Giants, but they don't recognize, you know, they don't recognize their alum. They don't recognize the teams that meant something to the city as well as the Giants do. They do it. They're the best at it. They really are. And I think most players will tell you that they always feel welcome there. Like I said, regardless, they played 2 months on a team that did well, but they'll call everybody. You know, our 2000 reunion, our 97 reunion, they call everybody. They want everybody that put on a Giant uniform for those years to come back and celebrate together and allow the fans to celebrate with them. So I definitely owe a lot, and that's the biggest reason why I came back and did, and I'm doing what I'm doing in San Francisco. I live in Arizona. I could have just as easy, you know, reached out to Derek Call, the president of the Arizona Diamondbacks, and try to, you know, start my broadcasting career here. But I just felt that just felt right. You know, unfortunately, NBC gave me a job, and now I'm going to be doing some games with the Giants this year. So I don't know. It felt right, and Peter was a big part of that.
That's the All-Star, Sean Estes. Sean, thanks for sharing your memories of Peter. Once again, we're sorry for the loss of your friend, and we look forward to your coverage of the Giants and coming on here again throughout the season, buddy.
Thanks, Sean.
Okay, guys. Yeah, good talking to you.
You know, it's funny, Herbs, you talked about 1995 when he came up with the Giants. Do you remember his September call-up? He got nothing but raked.
Mm-hmm.
Horrible. 2 years later, All-Star.
Yeah.
We'll talk about what happened with the Alomar brothers in that game. But, like every Giants pitcher. By the way, my cousin from Reno, who's a huge Giants fan, always says Reno guy, and I say Minden guy, way south of Carson City. Can we call him a Reno guy if he's from Minden?
I don't know the area well enough, Rick.
Well, that's like saying if you're from Campbell and you say San Francisco guy.
Well, can I say I'm a San Francisco guy if I grew up in Redwood City? Well, see, I was born in San Francisco, so that makes me a San Francisco guy, right?
Alrighty. Well, just like everything, life can be described in two ways.
It's time for Good for Ball.
Oh, that was outstanding.
Or Bad for Ball.
That is a disgusting act.
Here's Michael Urban.
All right, and we do mean everything. Everything. We stick to sports when we do it here, but literally everything in life. I mean, what did you mentioned a type of food yesterday.
Raisins were bad for ball.
Raisins bad for ball. It can be that simple, but just to make sure everyone knows how to play it, I always ask the co-host, from your day thus far, Rick, yesterday you gave us a bad for ball. Give me a good for ball so far in your day.
A good for ball, I would have to say, free parking on Sundays.
That is very good for ball, especially for somebody who got a ticket yesterday, a parking ticket, because somebody else...
What was it, $72?
Yeah, maybe somebody can help me with this. If you have a handicap placard and all of the handicap spots are filled, can I park at a meter and just put my handicap thing up and not get ticketed?
Do I look like Ironside over here? I don't know.
You know everything.
I don't know.
My God, you were singing Silent Night?
I would think so.
In another language earlier.
I would think so.
Okay, I'm going to start
trying. Anybody get the Ironside reference?
No, I didn't. See?
Okay.
You know too much.
All right. That was, never mind. Let us move on.
Now we are going to hand things off to producer Nash, who takes a great deal of professional pride in putting these topics together. Take it away, kid.
All right, gentlemen, first one on the board. We obviously saw the Warriors on the national stage last night win 115-111 over the Celtics. Another classic of Kyrie and Steph going back and forth with each other. Kyrie had some questionable statements after the game, though. He says the Dubs win was quote-unquote lucky. Good for ball or bad for ball? Players making excuses.
Well, I mean, it's by rote, it's bad for ball. I mean, excuses.
Incredibly bad for ball.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, it's frustrating to me because I'm a huge Kyrie Irving fan. So much so that I even love the commercials that he does. I just think he's an interesting dude. The flat earth thing, you know, it all adds to it. I like Kyrie Irving for whatever reason. I just like him, everything about him. But then I hear this and I'm like, yeah, I don't like that. I no longer like everything about you. I can't stand this. This is bad for ball.
By the way, on the Chilton Autobody text line 95795, first of all, shout out to the to L out there, my brother's friend. Thanks for the text. But also, one guy says, you're off the hook, Herbs. Your handicap Platcher allows you to park anywhere. And another guy says, fight the ticket with your Blackard. You can park anywhere.
Nice.
So the Platcher and the Blackard allow you to park anywhere.
Can I ask a favor of you, Rick?
By the way, somebody got my Perry Mason Ironside thing.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, go ahead.
Can I ask a favor of you?
Yeah.
If you're going to, somebody has taken the time to listen to our show, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Second, they've taken the time to reach out to us.
Mm-hmm.
Don't correct them.
I'm not correcting them. I'm reading it like it is. Platcher and Blackard.
You're not making fun of them in some way?
It's funny.
Okay.
Don't you think?
I think when they
hear... Are you jiggling your keys already? You're thinking about another ticket. You're okay today.
I think when they hear you do that, they definitely feel like you're criticizing them.
I'm laughing with them. I don't say, hey, what a dumb horse's ass. This guy can't spell. Because he's probably...
It's inferred, though, the way you say it.
It's not inferred because I don't have sausage thumbs, and I still can't spell on these glass screens. Texting was so much easier before the advent, the improvement of the glass screen. Bad for ball. Go ahead, Nash.
In honor of the greatest form of All-Star game being played today, the Pro Bowl, AFC won 26-7 over NFC. A little bit interesting. We saw players playing out of position in the Pro Bowl. Mike Evans almost had an interception, or he did. Alvin Kamara almost had a sack. So players playing out of position in the Pro Bowl. Good for ball or bad for ball?
Well, can I go first?
Yeah.
I'll go first on this one. Bad for ball. You play the position that you were named a Pro Bowler in. I get that it's grab ass and hardly anybody is going hard, but people already think your game is a mockery. Why would you add to it? Why would you give them more fuel? Bad for ball.
I would say this. I think it's bad for ball too, but you and I, our generation, Herbs, grab ass means something. For people who are under 40, you have to explain what that means. It's not literal.
No, grab ass is just, well, in some cases it might be. it's
screwing around.
Yeah, screwing around, jerking around, just not taking it seriously. That's the best way of putting it.
I remember
not taking it seriously.
First time I heard it, I was 14, and my football coach said, stop all this grab ass. And I was like, stop all this what? Crab grass? Go ahead, Nash.
Rams cornerback Aqib Talib, the former Patriot, called Tom Brady the GOAT today. Praising your opponent right before the biggest game in sports. Good for ball or bad for ball?
That's always good for ball. You always want to fawn over your opponents and say, oh, they're the best, they're the best. That's much better than saying he sucks and then they pin it up. Look who thinks we suck.
Right. I would never want to give my opponent any reason to rub something back in my face. And if you don't sing their praises, if you say something negative about them, and then let's say he runs for a touchdown right past you, you can guarantee you're going to hear about what you said before.
On the text line 510, there's two texts from this. Rick, you're great on the radio, but it does come off like you're correcting the caller, and it isn't a good look. Sorry. And the next one is, stop. So it's like, I just want to text this one time my whole life. I appreciate the text. I really do. Go ahead, Nash.
L.A. Chargers running back Melvin Gordon said he will be rooting for the Patriots in the Super Bowl because he doesn't want to see the L.A. rival win a Super Bowl. Good for ball or bad for ball that you're rooting for the team that beat you in the playoffs and you're calling the Rams a rival even they're in different conferences?
Everybody can make up whatever they want. I don't care who they root for. Good for ball. I don't care.
Don't force it. Bad for ball. Come on. It feels disingenuous. It feels like he's saying it because he feels like he should say it. And I think that's always a bad approach. Bad for ball.
Say it, don't spray it.
In an interview with Jeff Darlington of ESPN that'll air on Super Bowl Sunday, a little snippet came out. It's Tom Brady saying that there is a zero chance that he will retire. Good for ball or bad for ball that Brady's still playing, not letting anybody else in the AFC get to the big game.
Well, I mean, you put it in those terms, that sounds like he's being selfish. No, you have the rest of your life to sit in an easy chair and pet your Labrador retriever. Play as long as you can, man. Good for ball.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't imagine anybody saying that that's bad for ball unless you're somebody who gets routinely beaten out by the Patriots. If you're in the AFC East, I could see you thinking it's bad for ball. But my God, the longer he plays, the better.
By the way, Nash, I'm going to take over here because we just have a couple minutes left because I have one and I want to get Herb's thoughts on this. Kevin Durant is going back to Oklahoma City on March 20th, Herb. There's a day off. He's going back because they are going to be retiring the number for Nick Collison, guy who played his whole career, first 4 years with the Sonics and then the rest in OKC. Durant was with him for, 9 years? And Durant has just said, he told ESPN, quote, "That group was so special, that whole group from 2010 until I left here, it was special. It's about time for us to let go of all that extra stuff and just come together, especially around this time, because it's Nick." And I think this is a huge thing for him to go back where they throw cupcakes at him and do all these things, which he doesn't deserve. He put that city on a sporting map. That's pretty cool for him on a day off to get on a plane and fly all the way out there for his buddy Nick.
Absolutely. And what does that say about Nick Collison? I mean, there's people that are coming from all corners of the globe, it sounds like, to celebrate Nick Collison. You're lucky when you get to have as a teammate at the pro level somebody that you have that kind of respect and love and admiration for. I think it's a rarity, and I think it's obviously great for ball that Kevin Durant's going and recognizing that.
And the other thing is, too, is that if you are a Oklahoma City fan, you should be thankful for everything. He was there forever. He earned his free agency. He never cried his way out of town. He fulfilled every second of his contractual obligation. And yes, it's upsetting, and yes, you're sad to see him go. I get it. But if Steph Curry, at the end of his contract, wants to go to Charlotte, I'll throw rose petals at his feet. I'm not going to burn his jersey. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, and I always go back to this. If he had not signed the second contract, like if he bailed after the rookie deal was up, then fine. You can bury him all you want and hate him. But he gave you 9 years, man. And like you said, he earned his free agency. Back off. It's over.
All right. Tomorrow we will have the Warriors at Indy as they take on the Pacers without Victor Oladipo. Herb's always great working with you, my friend.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm Rick Tittle. We'll see you next time. 95.7 The Game.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.